On this show, what the best artificial sweetener is, and can it be a part of a healthy diet? We'll also discuss working out without weights, does exercise really matter for weight loss, and what real food preparation looks like when you're trying to lose weight. All this and more on episode number 53 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. And it's going to be a jam-packed informational show today. And we're going to start off with kind of a new section. I'm going to revamp it a little bit. It's called Keeping It Real.
The purpose of this section is really to make sure that we keep Russ on track this year and he truly hits all of his goals. So each week we're going to start off by asking about his weight like we did. And we're going to ask him some more things, some non-weight loss goals here and see how he's doing as well. So to start off, Russ, last show you were 250.5 pounds. How are you this week?
Yep, the holidays were good to me. It was 2 pounds up from the previous show. But this week, down to 248.2. That's a little over 2 pounds lost since the last show.
Well, that's excellent. And like I said, we're going to ask you about other things. So for your eating goals, how are you doing out of 10, do you think, this week?
You know, this week has been great. I would say a 10 out of 10. I've been using my Livestrong iPhone app and logging everything I'm eating and coming in at or under my calorie goals and not feeling a bit hungry. So ace is there, 10 out of 10.
Sounds good. How about your exercise goals?
Yeah, not so much there. Probably I was getting a 3 out of 10, you know, still doing the walking, but I had to do a little rework of the patio where the old elliptical machine is and ended up actually damaging it. So I got to repair it before I can get back on it, which will be in the next day or two. But because of that, 3 out of 10 for this week.
Okay, and then the last thing I'll ask you each week is how about your motivation?
You know, it's very good. I'd say 6 out of 10 if I had to give it a number. And just really with the food goals and eating as well as I am. And then again, not feeling hungry, which is a main thing. You know, if you're feeling hungry, number one, you're not eating enough food and you're feeling deprived, that's going to cause lots of problems. But yeah, I'd say the not being able to exercise like I wanted to brought me down a little bit. So yeah, 6 out of 10 for this week.
Well, I think that's a really good start. If you're only looking at your weight scale for your measure of success each week, you may be kind of discouraged if you have an off week. But if you're looking at your eating goals, your exercise goals, and your motivation, if that is, you know, 10 out of 10 and your weight just takes a little bit to catch up, that's not a big deal.
Yeah, you know what? If I had to add one more element to that, and maybe we'll do this for in upcoming weeks, but the non-weight related achievement, I would say. I'm actually between notches on my belt. I'm, you know, the previous hole is just a little bit too loose, and the new hole, the next hole is just a little bit too tight. So I'm right in between holes. So looking to get down to that next notch without cutting off the circulation to my leg. So, but that's coming. And so I'm really, really enjoying that.
That is awesome to hear. Well, let's move into our email and comment section. And the first item comes from Layla, and she writes, "Hello, I've just recently started listening to your podcast and I've been enjoying it. I have recently started my journey to weight loss and have about 15 kilos to lose, or about 32, 33 pounds. Here's my question. I'm a student, so money is an issue. I've managed to incorporate cardio into my life by walking outside, and I've bought a jump rope for those really rainy days, though I live in Israel, so that's not much of a problem. I would like to start strength training as well. I do the basic push-ups, sit-ups, lunges, and squats, but is there anything else I can do without breaking the budget? On an unrelated note, in a previous podcast, you said you should prepare the chicken without the skin, but a lot of people have told me that it's okay to cook it with the skin as long as you don't eat it. My mother actually pulls the skin away from the chicken and spreads the marinade underneath it and then leaves the skin on it while cooking. I ask because cooking without the skin leaves the chicken a bit dry. So how much difference does how you prepare it make as opposed to how you eat it? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work."
All right. So first off, the concept of working out without weights is one of my favorite. I know I don't have a lot of room for gym equipment. I don't have a lot of time to get to the gym. I had a membership to the local Y during the summer, but let that go for right now. So I'm working out at home here. So I dig working out without weights. And some of my favorites here, and this is not my particular list, but one I found, I'll leave a link in the show notes so you can check it out. But this is their top 10 list of exercises you can do with just your body. And I just want to go through a few of these. They're push-ups, which you mentioned. Dips, which are great for your arms. You know, you put your arms on a chair and kind of lower yourself down. It's great for a workout for the arms. I mean, abdominal exercises. You mentioned you're doing sit-ups, you know, crunches with obliques, twists, and all different types of abdominal exercises you can do. You also mentioned lunges. You can do walking lunges as well as kind of stationary. Those are great. So then they mentioned here hamstring curls, which I find a little strange, but it might do something for your legs. Standing squats, which you mentioned also are great. Step ups. Now, you know, if you have a porch on your, just start stepping up and down. It's like a really, really simple Stairmaster there. Or you can just find an area where you have a lot of stairs and go up and down your local athletic field. The bleachers are great for that as well. And there's also standing calf raises. Literally, it's amazing how well it will work. But just lifting your heels off the ground, those calves will be burning after a couple minutes. There's the plank hold, which you hold yourself up off the ground, and you'll be amazed. Holding yourself in a stiff position is a great exercise. And also the lunge hold, which I'll let you read that on the link at the show notes. So those are just some great suggestions. And then Jeff, you are also doing the a burpee challenge. It's also, burpees are a really great overall exercise for the whole body. How's that going, by the way?
It is incredibly hard. It's probably the hardest exercise I've ever done. And burpees, we talked about this probably 4 or 5 shows ago. It's where you're really doing a push-up, you know, a squat, a jumping in the air, and it's really a full body exercise. It's something that you might want to look into, just search on the internet and watch a video of how to do it. But that is something that it's a short workout and it's very intense. But one other thing, you're talking about how you're walking for cardio. The cheapest thing that you can possibly do for exercise is jogging. You know, you can progress into jogging, progress into running, you know, look to see if there's any sort of 5K races, not just to race, but to give yourself a goal to work up to. So that's just another idea. So Russ, how about this chicken question that she asked as well?
Well, as far as a chicken, you know, we've mentioned if you trim away the skin before you eat it, then you're going to get rid of about half the fat that's present in that chicken. But it makes very little difference in the fat content whether the skin's removed before or after cooking. But it's true, you know, the meat can be more moist and tender when it's cooked with the skin on. But instead of a marinade, now I would try this, brining your chicken before cooking. It gets the seasonings all the way through the meat. And I brined a turkey about 2 Thanksgivings ago, and it was literally the best turkey that I've ever had. I used a recipe from Alton Brown from the Food Network channel, the show Good Eats, and he did this whole thing on turkeys and brining a turkey. And there's a recipe, a couple recipes for the brine on the show notes. But you leave the turkey, or chicken in this case, in your refrigerator in this brine solution for 24 hours. And oh, man, it is some of the best chicken and turkey you will ever have. So go ahead and take off the fat, take off that skin after you cook it. And, you know, you're going to have trace amounts probably of more calories added to it, but it's not going to make a huge difference. But try brining that chicken for a really, really good chicken experience.
Sounds good. Well, let's move on to our second email. And this email comes in from Amanda.
And she writes, I find your idea about eating as if you were at your goal weight to be very interesting, as well as sensible. Using an online calculator, I've found that I need to consume 3,100 calories to maintain my current weight, and that I'll need 2,050 calories daily at my goal weight. My question, or problem, with this is that it doesn't feel like traditional dieting. I've seen so many women brag about a 1,000 calorie or less diet. Obviously, this is going to produce a lot of success quickly with a lot of fanfare, with things like, oh, you look wonderful. For me, the higher calorie method with a weight loss of about 1 pound every 10 days is going to take, well, at least 18 months. What advice do you have for individuals who feel pressured to lose a lot of weight quickly? Thanks for all you do for others.
Well, first of all, I responded to Amanda with an email to kind of help her out with her numbers. See, to maintain her weight, she figured out she needs 3,100 calories. At her goal weight, she needs 2,050 calories. That's over 1,000 calorie deficit per day. And that's going to work out to, you know, 2 pounds per week, at least theoretically, in weight loss. So it's not going to take her that long. She's got a long ways to go, but the weight loss will be coming off at a reasonable pace. Remember, 1 to 2 pounds per week, or maybe 1% of your weight per week, is the most that you ever want to lose. So this is a healthy level for her to lose. About my advice for people who are feeling pressured to lose weight quickly, I have 4 main points here. And the first point is, don't hang out in chat rooms or forums with people who clearly don't get it about weight loss. Losing short-term weight isn't the problem. Everyone can lose a couple of pounds in a short amount of time with sheer willpower, but the true goal is keeping it off. I can guarantee that those people who brag about losing weight fast are no longer bragging a year later, or maybe they are because they're losing weight super fast yet again. I mean, who really cares? Go back to that same form a year later and a year after that and tell them about the weight that you have lost and kept off, and now you're going to start to feel a little bit differently about those people that are still in those same forums talking about the same crash diets. And secondly, if a person brags about how fast they can lose weight, ask them about other diets that they have tried and that haven't worked in the past. I'm sure that they're going to start to give you a list of all the diets that they've been on in the past, and this should really give you an idea of how much of a failure they truly are, because diet after diet, they're failing and failing. Your goal is to get down to healthy weight. Your goal should be losing weight, you know, for the long term, not to see how fast you can change the numbers on a scale. Is your goal in losing weight to see how fast you can change the numbers on a scale, or do you truly want to get healthy in the best shape of your life for the rest of your life? Thirdly, if you feel pressure to lose weight fast, you have to admit that this isn't the first time that you have felt this. Most people have probably tried and failed many, many times over. And I'm sure that people have felt the stress to lose weight fast, and then when it doesn't happen, they start to feel really disappointed with themselves. Perhaps you even feel embarrassed when other people who you've told about your great crash diet see that you failed. You most likely even have a love-hate relationship with food right now, because that's what crash diets will do to you. You start to hate the food, and you feel guilty when you eat because you're trying to deny yourself so much about this food. So to truly succeed, you have to say that you're never going to go on a diet ever again, including right now, and that you're just going to live like that thinner person that you want to become. And my last point here, many studies have shown that the faster you lose weight, the faster you gain it back. Look ahead 5 years as to where you want to be in your life. If you're setting proper goals that you can visualize, you should see yourself as this thinner, healthier person. Do you want to get there by going through a dozen or so crash diets where you're feeling deprived and all of this stress and all the pressure and negative emotions that you associate with dieting? Or do you want to be that healthy person for the next 5 years and just living that lifestyle and gradually getting there? There's no great rush to get there. So literally, if someone is bragging about a 1,000-calorie diet, ask them how many times they've dieted. This will really put things in perspective. Your goal here is to never even want to go back to a weight loss form or anything, because there's going to be no need, because you've changed your life and you're living that lifestyle.
All right, good advice. But I want to thank Layla and Amanda for their emails. If you'd like to get your question answered or make a comment to us, there's a couple ways to do that. The first one is to leave a comment on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
You can also leave us a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button over on the right-hand side of the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now let's tackle a couple of news items on this week's web report. And what do you have for us first, Jeff?
Well, the article that I have this week comes from Scientific American, their online version, and I will leave a link in the show notes. And it's entitled, "Does Exercise Really Make You Healthier?" And the thing that really draws me to Scientific American is I don't take many things at face value. I want to see something that's backed up by a whole ton of studies. So they list 6 different ways that exercise makes you healthier, and then they back it up with all of the studies if you want to look things up. So first of all, the article starts off, it says that the Department of Health and Human Services late this year released its new physical activity guidelines for Americans, calling for adults between the ages of 18 and 64 to exercise moderately, such as brisk walking or water aerobics, for at least 2 hours and 30 minutes, or vigorously for at least 1 hour and 15 minutes every week. And the longer, harder, and more often you exercise, the greater the health benefits. So the first benefit that's backed up by science here is it's good for the heart. In the past decade or so, they have hundreds of studies here with thousands of participants that have shown that workouts lower the risk of heart disease. Exercise has a favorable effect on virtually all risk factors of cardiovascular disease. We all know it's good for the heart. The second thing, less cancer. A lot of studies have been showing that regular exercise lowers the risk for certain cancers, particularly breast and colon cancer. The third thing, it builds stronger bones. Moderate exercise increases and maintains bone mass and reduces the risk of osteoporosis. The most compelling evidence is that if you don't do anything, your fracture risk is much greater. So like muscles, bones become stronger when forced to bear more weight than normal through exercise. The fourth benefit is that it wards off diabetes, especially type 2 diabetes. And we talked about that. That is really a disease of obesity and lack of exercise. Fifth thing, now this is kind of new this year. There's studies that are showing that exercise makes you smarter. Especially later in life, your faculties don't diminish as quickly when you're exercising. And the last one, of course, we all know this one, exercise helps in weight loss. It burns some more calories. It helps with that calories in versus calories out equation. So if you're interested in this article and you want to read it in detail and look at the studies that are showing all of these facts, you can head to fattofitradio.com and I will leave a link that goes to this article on Scientific American.
Very cool. I think the addition of the makes you smarter, that appeals to me. You know, others, there's weight loss and wards off diabetes. I mean, those are important also. But the fact that you think clearer after a workout, it clears everything out. I've noticed that myself, that, you know, all of a sudden I have like this great idea. I'm on the treadmill and I'm during the workout, I'll think, oh man, that'd be a great idea. And I have to make sure I don't forget it but after I get off the thing. But you think clearer and better after your workout. And I think that's just a side benefit to the whole getting fit and healthy.
Well, that's right. They always talk about a healthy mind, healthy body. It's all the same. I mean, it's just another organ in your body, right? So what do you have for us this week for your web report, Russ?
Well, I have this. It's a great website, really interesting article. It's over at, may have heard of it. It's called fat2fitradio.com. The article is called Welcome to Jeff's Kitchen. And it's a beautiful picture here of 35 Tupperware containers full of delicious meal. And he writes here, here are my next 35 lunches. I usually eat two of these a day for lunch and afternoon meal. I now cook about every 3 weeks. It's a total of 9 pounds of chicken breasts, 16 pounds of mixed vegetables, and 18 cups of cooked basmati rice. And this guy's crazy. It's an amazing amount of food. I think he's got probably the freezer, like a whole room of his house is probably a freezer. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, well, it's my freezer. It's not that big, but this is really the key to my success. These meals that I cook, and I do change about every 3 weeks. I will change the spices on the chicken and the type of rice, but I do eat them for about 3 weeks, and this is kind of my core. I know that I'm getting tons of vegetables because I'm eating two of these meals a day. I know that I'm getting a lot of protein because I'm having chicken. And even if I don't have a great dinner or maybe I'm late and I miss breakfast for whatever reason, I always have my core meals that are always ready to go no matter what. I can pull them out of the freezer and take them with me. And I find if I'm really not prepared, that is always the downfall for me having a bad day of eating. So I sent Russ a picture of my kitchen to kind of prove this is how I do it. And then he made a post on it.
Yeah, so we had one question here from Jessica, and she wrote, and no worries about getting tired of what you're eating the same thing twice a day. Being an overweight person, one of the reasons is I just love food. Now, I know I can't consume as much of it as I want to, but I don't know that I could eat the same meal twice a day for that many days. I mean, that seems a little crazy, Jeff.
But when you're eating six meals a day, you have four other meals every day to change things around.
Ah, yes.
And if I really get bored with what I'm eating, sure, I may have 10 or 15 left in the freezer. I'll cook a new batch of something different. And really, it's all about spices and how you prepared things. I mean, Chinese food is really the same as just what I'm eating here, just different spices. So you can kind of mix it up and still have different flavors and think you're eating different stuff, but it can be very similar.
So tell me, Jeff, how long do you take to prepare 35 meals?
Well, including the cleanup, it's sometimes maybe 2.5 hours, but that's 2.5 hours every 3 weeks or so. You know, maybe even 4 weeks if I miss a couple days. And if you're cooking every single day, that really adds up a lot more than that.
And really, how big is your freezer? I couldn't fit three of these in my freezer.
Well, these aren't actually that big. When you're looking at it in the picture, they're only about the size of a sandwich. They're actually quite small.
Yeah, I think the perspective there just made it a little deceiving on the size of these containers. But okay, great. Well, that's, again, that's just, I wanted to highlight this because Jeff sent me this picture and it was very impressive. I mean, the whole table full of these containers of food. And, you know, I just wanted to highlight that, you know, this is how you prepare meals in advance. We talk about it all the time. And on the goal setting show we did in the beginning of the year, that was one of my main things, the fact that you can really, success comes from preparation. If you fail to plan, plan to fail. And Jeff here is preparing to succeed. So good job.
You know, having meals prepared, having in my fridge, I've got carrots and celery, you know, kind of floating in some water there to eat if I get, you know, the munchies. It's stuff like that that really makes it easy to succeed in this weight loss business here.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for our web report. And now we're going to dive headlong into this week's feature section about artificial sweeteners.
The idea for this topic was from an email that originally came from Stacy. And her question was, what is the difference between Equal, Splenda, Sweet and Low, and Stevia? I've heard Stevia is better for you because it is a plant. Is that true? Is it better to have regular sugar or to use one of these options instead?
So this is a great question. I think a lot of listeners probably have asked this to themselves. There's a lot of marketing hype behind these products, so it's understandable that there could be some misconceptions about these products. So Splenda, Equal, and Sweet and Low are what's called artificial sweeteners. They were concocted by a chemist in a lab, and they're extremely popular because their sweetness is many times that of sucrose, which is known to you and me as ordinary table sugar, which you buy in a 5-pound bag over at the grocery store. So as a result of this sweetness, much less of the sweetener is required, and the calorie contribution to the product is negligible. If it adds a calorie, you know, in a gallon, that's about what you'd get. So here's a short rundown of the products you asked about.
So the first one is Splenda, and Splenda is generally known as sucralose. It's one of the newer artificial sweeteners on the market. It was approved by the FDA in 1988. It is 600 times sweeter than regular table sugar. Just kind of amazing. The next one is Equal, and it's generally known as aspartame. It's also sold as NutraSweet. Aspartame was approved by the FDA in 1981, and it's still 200 times sweeter than regular table sugar. And the last main one here is Sweet and Low, and its generic name is saccharin. That's been around for quite a while. It was approved by the FDA in 1958, and it's still 300 times sweeter than regular table sugar.
And so the three artificial sweeteners you asked about are three out of the five that are approved right now for use as a sweetener for food in the United States. The other two are Neotame and, now this is going to be fun to pronounce, Acesulfame Potassium. All right, so Neotame is extremely new. It was approved by the FDA in 2002. And get this is amazing. It's 8,000 times the sweetness of table sugar. 8,000. It's amazing. Acesulfame potassium is 200 times as sweet as table sugar. But myself, I have not heard of any products, and I've not seen any products. If you know of any that are sweetened with this, these two products, I'd like to hear about it. But I have not found any myself or consumed any for sure.
You also asked about stevia. Stevia is not a synthetic sweetener. It's actually a herb that is native to Paraguay that is 250 times sweeter than table sugar. It's used as a sweetener in other countries, but here in the U.S., it cannot be sold as a sweetener, though that's how it will be used more often than not. Thanks to the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHEA, it is now a dietary supplement and therefore isn't subject to strict testing as to its safety. It is really considered a food product. So, are these sweeteners safe?
So, in doing research for this, I found out the FDA has established the maximum amount a person can consume of these sweeteners on a daily basis. This is called the acceptable daily intake. And for those of you who are Diet Coke junkies, really, listen to this because it's very interesting. The first one, aspartame, also NutraSweet and Equal. The ADI, that acceptable daily intake, is 50 milligrams per kilogram. Equivalent diet soda is 18 to 19 cans. So if you're drinking more than 19 cans of a diet soda with aspartame, you're doing yourself some harm there.
And the next one is saccharin, which is Sweet and Low or Sugar Twin. And the acceptable daily intake is 9 to 12 packets of sweetener. The one thing about saccharin, you can actually use it for cooking.
Yes, and of course, I get the one with the bad name here, acesulfame potassium. It's in two products they mention here, Sunnet and Sweet One. And he says here, you can drink 30 to 32 cans of diet, and they specifically call it here lemon-lime soda, so apparently specifically in lemon-lime soda, a day. And it can also be used for cooking.
And the last one is sucralose, or the common term is Splenda. And if something is sweetened with Splenda, that would be equivalent of 6 cans of Diet Cola would be the acceptable daily level. The one thing about Splenda is it works just kind of like sugar. You can bake with it. It's the same volume when you're cooking with it. So it is becoming very popular right now. So those are the acceptable daily intake of each of these sweeteners. But let's talk about the safety of these artificial sweeteners as a whole.
Yes, artificial sweeteners are often the subject of stories. They're presented in the popular press and on the internet, claiming that they cause just a variety of health problems, including cancer. According to the National Cancer Institute, there's no scientific evidence that any of the artificial sweeteners approved for use in the United States causes cancer. And numerous studies confirm that artificial sweeteners are safe for the general population. Aspartame does carry a cautionary note, however. It isn't safe for people who have the rare hereditary disease, and I'll give you the letters here, PKU. You can look that up and pronounce it for yourself. Products that contain aspartame must carry a PKU warning on the label.
The one thing about all these sweeteners, they are truly empty calories. Even if they only have a few calories, they are truly empty. So just removing sugar from cookies and chocolates doesn't make them low-calorie, low-fat foods. If you eat too many, you're still going to get more calories than what you need, and you may not get enough nutritious foods. Unlike fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, sugar-free soft drinks, candy, and desserts often provide few, if any, beneficial nutrients. So use these artificial sweeteners sensibly. It's okay to substitute a diet soda for regular soda, for example, but diet soda shouldn't be the only beverage that you drink.
All right, so you might be thinking, what do we suggest? It's always best to eat the most natural, unprocessed foods that you can find. So perhaps stevia might be better if you don't want to eat any artificially created products. One of the main problems with our society right now is that most people have become accustomed to eating things that are either heavily spiced or overly sweet. If you quickly change your diet to one that has no sweetness at all, you might have a tough time sticking to that eating program because you will start to crave that sweetness again. You never want to remove any single item from your diet for the rest of your life. You know, everything in moderation.
These products are great at helping you transition into eating healthier if you use them sparingly and in reasonable amounts. If you're following our lifelong strategy of eating like the thinner person you want to become, the use of artificial sweeteners may not be just for saving some calories. Think of biting into a fresh, sweet corn on the cob. That is natural sweetness. But many people over time find corn very bland because their tastes have changed to expect much more than what nature can provide. I mean, some of these sweeteners we're talking about hundreds of times more sweet than regular table sugar. And everyone has heard that I'm a big fan of oatmeal, but I'm going to admit that I can't eat regular, you know, whole cooked oats just straight. I can't do it. I went from putting brown sugar on it to now I put a little bit of Splenda when it's cooking, and I think eventually, hopefully I can keep cutting back the amount of Splenda, but it was a transition for me from using sugar to eating healthier, and if it gets you eating healthier food because you're using a little bit of artificial sweetener, I think that's a good transition. And hopefully eventually we can all get off these artificial sweeteners and just enjoy the whole natural foods like we all know we should be eating.
All right, Stacey, hope that answers your question about those artificial sweeteners. I myself, I'm going to try, check out stevia. I don't know that I put a lot of sugar in things, but the idea of having a more natural sweetener versus Splenda or any of those other things, particularly in my coffee. I don't think I'm going to put it in my coffee. Might be a good choice. So that's going to do it for our feature section this week.
Sounds good. Well, let's move on to the recipe of the week.
All right, so we have the end of football season coming. I myself have not watched a single game, but I always do watch the Super Bowl, and I always have just a nice bowl of chili. And so I go looking for new recipes every year. I don't want to go with the old standby. I'm just tired of that now. It's been years since I've been making that same recipe. And so I found this one on a website. It's called Kalen's Kitchen, or Kalen's Kitchen probably. It is black bean and beef chili. And it has this, the best part, this cilantro, lime, and avocado salsa, a little dollop on top. And I tell you what, the picture, it looks out of this world. And I am definitely going to make this. It has black beans, which I don't usually do in chili, so I'm going to go for that. So take a look at this recipe for the black bean and beef chili.
Oh, sounds good.
All right, Jeff. So what kind of homework do we have for the lovely people at home this week?
Well, it's a new year, and the homework that I have this year, some people may have done this in the past and other years for a couple weeks have tried it out, but this is something that is really going to help out with your weight loss and your fitness. So start a food diary to truly keep track of what you're eating every single day. If you are truly looking for something that will help you lose some weight, this is guaranteed to help you become more accountable and aware of what you're eating. In fact, when I was looking on the Scientific American site and looking up some studies, I was not able to find a single nutrition or weight loss study that did not come to the conclusion that keeping an accurate food diary keeps you on track and helps people lose weight for the long term. So you don't have to keep a food diary for the rest of your life, but it really helps you find out how you're doing right now and how many calories and what you're truly putting in your mouth right now.
So what is our quote for the week?
Well, this quote comes from JCPenney, you know, from the JCPenney store's fame, and it's a really good quote about goal setting. And he said, "Give me a stock clerk with a goal, and I'll give you a man who'll make history. Give me a man with no goals, and I'll give you a stock clerk."
All right, good quote. I want to thank everybody that participated in the show by sending in comments and emails. Really appreciate those. And all those show notes that we mentioned, we have a lot of them this week. They'll be over at the website at fat2fitradio.com. Thank you for downloading and thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast at fat2fitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.